Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope you guys had a great holiday weekend. Hope your week is getting started off on the right foot. It is another OTA week. One of those OTAs will be open to the media. That is tomorrow's practice on Wednesday. I will be there, and I will be, of course, here on Thursday to break everything down for you. So looking forward to that this week. Up until then, though, we don't stop. It's a 365-day-a-year Pack-A-Day podcast. We do Packers content the best every single day of the year. So we have a great episode lined up for you today. I'm going to be talking about the Packers' biggest strengths overall, as a team, as an organization, all of it. Tomorrow, we'll get to be a bit more negative, which is my least favorite thing to do, but tomorrow we'll discuss the weaknesses of the Green Bay Packers and some of the things that they're going to have to improve upon and get better at and address if they want to be everything they think they can be, and I think they can be, and hopefully you think they can be going into this upcoming season. But today we get to stick on the positive side of things, and that is with everything that this organization has going for it right now. I've got 12 different things that I want to cover in detail. So let's get it started right away with number one. And that has to be, it has to be Jordan Love. There may be those of you who are skeptical. There may be those of you who say, I really liked what Jordan Love did in the second half of last season, but had an opportunity against San Francisco, didn't come up at the end of the game when the opportunity presented itself. It was only half of a season. It was a very small sample size. You know, he was put in some advantageous situations, and I'm going to wait and see until I can make a full determination on Jordan Love. And to some extent, I understand that. I understand that what we've seen from Jordan was a really impressive overall first season that was definitely weighted heavily on the back half of the season where we really saw some incredible stuff. Here's where I come in, or, you know, just my overall and overarching thoughts on where Jordan Love is as a quarterback. I believe that what he did in the second half of last year cannot be by accident. It can't be happenstance. You can't stumble into it. It can't just be against, you know, you got the right defenses at the right time. I just simply do not believe that. And again, I understand that we need to see this play out. Nobody is crowning Jordan Love today and saying, yep, he's the greatest. He's going to be a top three quarterback. You know, he's everything that we need him to be right now. I'm not saying that yet. But what I am saying is there is a baseline now that I believe is there that I don't believe, again, that he stumbled into and that I don't believe he's going to fall underneath those expectations. And I'm not saying every year, I'm not saying he's going to be incredible. I'm just saying I've seen it with my own two eyes. You've seen it. We've broken it down. We've discussed it ad nauseum. That second half of the year was pretty freaking special. And from a statistics standpoint, I think Warren Sharp did a great job of it recently by saying from week 11 on, and you might say week 11, that's pretty late. Week 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. That's eight NFL regular season weeks now. Remember, 18 weeks. So that's eight regular season weeks. From week 11 on, Jordan Love was number one in total touchdowns amongst quarterbacks, number one in total passing yards, number one in EPA per attempt, number one in lowest sack plus interception rate, number one in touchdown to interception ratio, number two in fewest interceptions thrown with one, number two in success rate, number two in first down rate, number three in completion rate, and number three in third down conversion rate. That's not just like cherry picks. Those are the most elite statistics for quarterbacks that you can possibly imagine. It's every single one. He's in the top three. And again, week 11 on. And we saw plays. Big-time plays, big-time throws, audibles at the line of scrimmage, checkdowns. We saw him throw the ball away, avoid the big mistakes, you know, avoid sacks, make plays with his legs, ad lib, make plays when he needed to, take what's there when it needs to just be, you know, getting the ball out of his hands and taking what's there. We saw all of it. There is nothing, there's absolutely zero anything that I can point to and say, well, we didn't see that. We saw everything. The only thing that we have not seen is it done for a consecutive or, you know, a consistent period of time. I guess just longevity, I'll put it that way. We haven't seen it season over season over season over season. That's what we haven't seen. Everything else from an individual play, from Jordan Love the player, from arm talent, athletic ability, all of it, we have seen it. It's there. We don't have to make it up. We don't have to think it, you know, hope it. It's just already there. And here's the thing. Wherever Jordan Love comes out in the wash this season, top 10 quarterback, top 12 quarterback, whatever it might be, top five, top three, who knows? Wherever that comes out, a prerequisite to being a Super Bowl contending team is at least a quarterback where Jordan Love is at, in my opinion, right now. That's like the pre, you have to have at least that. He has reached the prerequisite amount of quarterback talent needed to at least have the opportunity, if everything else goes right, to contend for a Super Bowl. And at this point last year, we simply did not know that. We didn't know if Jordan Love was even going to be a competent starter, much less a good, great, spectacular, or anything else starter. And then we saw it from week 11 on with, again, everything really at stake in the second half of last season, where they're, you know, trying to fight and climb back into a playoff race. And then Jordan came up when they needed him at his best, came up with some huge wins, goes into Dallas, picks up that win. And we saw a really impressive version of Jordan Love. And now the next step for him is going to be to carry that over into 2024, 2025 and beyond, and be that same consistent player week in and week out. But Jordan knows that. He has talked about that. He has talked about being that consistent player week in and week out and doing it over and over and over. That is his goal. But again, if you want to have a shot at a Super Bowl, if you want to be a contending team, this is what you need at minimum. And Green Bay probably needs even a step above, you know, from the overall season that he had, or just him to continue to play the way that he did over the second half of last season. If you have that, you've got a chance. You've got a puncher's chance year in and year out. And that's what Green Bay has bought themselves with Jordan Love. And if you don't think that that is a strength of the team, I don't know what to tell you. It just is. And I know that there are some that are already getting concerned and saying, you know, it's great that Jordan Love played to this level, but now you have to give him the contract. And we have seen it is very difficult to win when you have that exorbitant contract for one player. There's a piece of that that is unequivocally true. However, there are ways to counterbalance that. And the ways to counterbalance that are when you don't have to pay your wide receiver core anything, which is what Green Bay's at right now. When you don't have to pay your tight ends anything, which is where Green Bay's at right now. When the only player along the offensive line that's really making much of anything is Elgton Jenkins. When you have one playmaker on the entire offense that's making a decent amount of money, and that's Josh Jacobs, and it's basically a pseudo one-year deal. They have so much youth on offense that's not getting paid yet that you have the ability to go out and pay your quarterback that much money. And if Brian Gutekunst can show that he can continue to draft and develop players, you hopefully churn those playmakers through and you decide which ones you want to pay and decide which ones you want to go younger and cheaper with. And he's going to try to do, I'm sure, the same thing on defense as well. But there are ways to make that work. The one way that you cannot make it work is if you don't have the quarterback. And we saw that this year. Teams going all in to try to grab all of these quarterbacks in the first, 12 picks of the draft? Six of them? Six QBs in the top 12. Guys like Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, you know, Michael Penix going even, you know, picks 8 through 12? And then you still had, obviously Drake May and Jaden Daniels and of course, Caleb Williams. Like, teams were trying everything they could to get those quarterbacks early because they know if you don't have one, you're just flat out screwed. So Jordan Love, unequivocally for me, strength of this team. They have their quarterback. I don't know if anyone wants to debate on that or not, or if everyone's just like, yeah, we get it. He's that good. And that's where we should be at this point. And now, again, it's up to Jordan. The other thing I'll say here, too, is maybe there are also those who are saying, yeah, but now defenses are going to throw a lot of different stuff at him. I agree. They are going to. And maybe eventually somebody finds something that sticks. However, teams threw just about everything at Jordan Love this past season, especially in the second half of last season. And the blitzes that they threw at him were not only frequent, but unique. And they threw some kitchen sink stuff at Jordan Love and, you know, sort of some sink or swim stuff. And he swam. Not only did he swim, he excelled in those situations. So yeah, teams are going to try different stuff. They're going to find something maybe eventually that works, or maybe Jordan Love just figured it out. And I'll just be, you know, totally honest and transparent one more time and saying that's what it looked like. It looked like in real time, the Pittsburgh game, and Matt LaFleur's talked about it. I tried to get Jordan to talk about it, but he didn't. I asked him it towards the end of the season. But it, by every account, it feels like the Steelers game is where everything just sort of slowed down, not only for Jordan, but for this offense as a whole. And that's the other thing too, is, you know, it felt like in that first half of the season, Jordan was kind of fighting with a hand behind his back because the offensive line wasn't really where it should be. It felt like they didn't have a great feel for all the different weapons yet. You know, the running game wasn't going because AJ Dillon was in there. And now it's like, you've got a fully operational Death Star here. You've got the weapons he needs and a coach that understands exactly the plays that Jordan is liking, with the weapons that he can get mismatches with now more depth at running back. It feels like they're more fully operational even going into this season than they were at any point last season, which is going to help Jordan as well. So for me, biggest strength for this Packers franchise right now is the fact that they have found their franchise quarterback. Jordan Love is that guy and should be that guy for the foreseeable future. Number two is Matt LaFleur. This is another one. I am not crowning Matt LaFleur and saying, look at him, greatest coach in the league. We know that if you want to be considered a great coach in the NFL, you got to win the big one more often than not. There are precious few that people will call greats without ever winning one, but it is very few and far between. And if Matt wants to be considered on that upper echelon of coaches, he's got to find a way to win a Super Bowl. But there are a lot of things that Matt brings to the table that are very clearly advantages for this franchise. I thought Kevin Clark and Mina Kimes had a great discussion about Matt LaFleur being a top five NFL head coach right now. He's 59-31 in his career so far. And we'll talk about some of the other things that he brings to the table, but just his ability to be the true coach of this team, to have his, you know, finger on the pulse of the team, to understand when he needs to ramp up practices, when he needs to kind of scale things back, to be what I kind of consider a player's coach, but also be extremely tough on these guys when he needs to be. And then just to kind of keep things always in perspective, always afloat, regardless of what's going on. He sets the culture of this team. And this culture, to me, since he got here, has been remarkably impressive. And there's a few things here or there. Obviously, Aaron was upset a couple times. Take that or leave it, whatever you want to do with it. Obviously, Devondre Campbell has had some things to say. There's always going to be a couple dissenters along the way. But more often than not, the players that have played for him that are still on this roster have had nothing but positive things to say about the culture that Matt LaFleur has brought and the overall state of the organization. And to me, that has a ton to do with the head coach. So the fact that he has that culture really intact and at a very high level and really promotes ideas within the team, you know, sets, you know, players up to be leaders and in leadership positions in the organization, I think is super important as well. But here's the other thing. Whatever you feel about him as a coach, his offense works. And he knows how to find mismatches, attack defenses, and tear apart even some of the best defenses in the NFL. Now, they need to come up with big wins in big games. There's no question about that. And part of that falls on Matt LaFleur. There are some game management stuff here and there that I think he can continue to improve upon. Certain times with the challenges, some things, again, he can improve upon. I'm not saying Matt's perfect, but I do think that he is at minimum in the top third of coaches in this league. I do believe that he is one of the absolute best play callers in this league. I do believe he runs one of the best, most efficient offenses in this league. And those are things that are super important, not only to the franchise, but to the development of Jordan Love and his ability to get Jordan playing at that level that he was a season ago. That to me is also not by accident. Now give Jordan a ton of credit for that. Give Tom Clements a ton of credit for that. Give, you know, Brian Gutekunst for some of the pieces that he was able to put around him. But I also put a lot of that on Matt LaFleur and making a friendly offense that is worth, you know, or able to make Jordan Love, you know, at least give him the opportunity to play at the level that he played at. And it's, there's a synergy there, right? I'm not saying it's just one or just the other. It takes everyone doing their part. That's the beautiful thing about football. But Matt's offense has proven successful. I go back to this all the time. When Mark Murphy talked about hiring Matt LaFleur, he hired Matt LaFleur with the idea of that he needed, somebody needed to come in and get Aaron playing at an MVP level again. You have to remember where Aaron was at before Matt came back. Some of those later, you know, Mike McCarthy years, it was, I don't want to say it was tough to watch in the scheme of things, because as Aaron has said over and over, and he's not necessarily wrong, his worst years are a lot of players' best years. So I get wholeheartedly how spoiled we have been as Packer fans that even Aaron's worst years are still pretty freaking good. But in comparison to the Aaron that we had come accustomed to, those last years in the Mike McCarthy era were brutal in comparison to the peaks of what Aaron Rodgers was capable of and the peaks that Matt LaFleur got Aaron Rodgers playing at again when he took over. And I still go back to this. I believe the way that Matt handled that transition could not have been more perfect. And the reason I say that is if he would have come in from day one and said, Aaron, you're running my offense, it's my way or the highway, it would have been immediate fireworks. It would have been a nightmare. You know, and this is not a shot necessarily at Aaron in any way, but you know, because we've seen it, you know that Aaron's just going to sort of go rogue and he's going to change the plays and he's not going to have that buy-in. You think you can tell me, like, I'm just going to do my thing. And it would have been a nightmare. I think it would have been an absolute nightmare. So what does he do? He comes in and says, what do you like to do? And he runs really a pretty, you know, Aaron Rodgers-esque offense that first year. And it's partly integrating some of the LaFleur stuff in. I would say it's probably 60-40 Aaron Rodgers offense with 40% Matt LaFleur. But he took little steps over time. And then you had 2020 and Aaron bought in. Aaron bought in completely. And we saw, I would say 90-10, maybe 80-20, Matt LaFleur's offense. And then 2020, the next couple seasons, it started to kind of get away a little bit. And then we again saw Matt LaFleur's, I think this past season with Jordan Love coming back. But overall, I think the way that he handled that, and I think the way that he handled the transition to Jordan Love has been fantastic. So his system, his offense, his play calling, his ability to set up mismatches and get mismatches for his wide receivers, his tight ends, and his quarterback to be able to exploit, all of it to me is super impressive. I think he is legitimately one of the best coaches in the league. And I do think he has everything that's needed to lead this team, hopefully, to that Super Bowl. But I do believe that Matt LaFleur is absolutely a strength of this team, specifically with the culture that he has built overall. Hey friends, I don't know about you guys, but I am getting more and more excited about the NBA Finals coming up. It's certainly looking like it's going to be Celtics-Mavs, but regardless of the matchups, the Finals should be absolutely epic. But of course, they could be even more epic with Prize Picks. The Finals mean more on Prize Picks, and so do the star players. You get boosted payouts on select basketball stars that you will not find anywhere else. And while the Finals promise to be exciting, the hoops action doesn't stop when the Finals are over. Women's basketball is just getting started, and young stars like Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and Cameron Brink are immediately making a significant impact in the WNBA. And you, yes you, could win up to 100 times your cash watching them ball out with Prize Picks. You guys know by now how much I'm enjoying Prize Picks. It's completely changed my fantasy sports experience for the better. I'm already excited about my picks for this week. I'm going with Breanna Stewart, and I'm expecting a monster bounce back from Anthony Edwards against the Mavs. I'm still feeling bullish on Caitlin Clark as well, and I'm expecting her to become more and more efficient as the season goes along. So what are you waiting for? Get in on the action with Prize Picks right now. Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Number three, depth. I think if you look at this roster as a whole, the depth that they have put basically at almost every position has been massively impressive. Now, the first position we, of course, should talk about is quarterback. And that's a big question mark. If Jordan Love goes down for any significant period of time, what you get out of Sean Clifford or Michael Pratt is a massive, massive question mark. We have no idea. And it's probably just not great, right? At best, and it could be a lot worse than that, but it's probably not great. So you might question, well, all right, then everything's just up to Jordan Love. And if he gets hurt, like, is there really great depth then? I'm a pretty big believer in the Indianapolis Colts way of life. And this was when they were with Peyton Manning and they had no backup for Peyton whatsoever. Just a slew of quarterbacks that it was going to be brutal if Peyton ever got hurt. And they asked him and they're like, well, what happens if Peyton gets hurt? And they said, if Peyton gets hurt, we're effed and we don't practice effed. I'm a believer of that philosophy more often than not. If Jordan Love goes down for a massive chunk of the season, you're probably just going to be a bad football team. At least you're not contending. And at that point, who your backup quarterback is probably doesn't matter a ton. Now, if he goes down for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, do you want them to be able to go 2-2, 3-3? Yes. Do I think Sean Clifford could potentially do that? Yes, I do. It's going to take some effort. Maybe take the right matchups at the right time. Maybe get a couple bounces to go your way. But yeah, in a 4-6 game stretch, I think you could go 2-2, 3-3. But yes, if you lose Jordan for any other extended period of time, you're just going to have a losing season. It's like every team is basically set up that way far more often than not. And I don't have an issue with that. If you're going to be bad, just be bad, get a better draft pick next year and set yourself up for the following season. That's probably the better way to do it more often than not. But outside of Jordan, where again, you don't practice effed, everything else, what they've been able to do to develop that wide receiver room, there are three running backs at least deep right now. The tight ends with having Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave, and then even a guy like Ben Sims at number three. We saw them really develop the depth along the offensive line, or at least give them opportunities to with the draft they had and then picking up Andre Dillard right before the draft. Edge rusher, right? They're four deep at edge rusher, guys that can come in and play and there's no significant drop off. Inside linebacker, they addressed by getting Hopper and Edgerrin Cooper in the draft. Interior defensive line, corner, we can talk about if they have that true number two, but they've got guys that are backing up now. Like either Carrington Valentine or Eric Stokes are going to be backing up. Corey Ballantyne's going to be backing up. They've got guys that can go in that have shown that they can play in this league. And of course, safety, they get Xavier McKinney and then they go draft three more safeties. They've still got Anthony Johnson Jr. and a couple other guys that could be core special teamers. They have a ton of depth on this roster where we know there's going to be injuries. We know this team is going to have guys step up. And Brian Gutekunst has put them in a position where they can have guys that step up. So depth is number three for me. Number four, the offensive weapons. And this kind of goes with depth a little bit. It is absurd that this is a group of playmakers that has Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd, A.J. Dillon, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, Bo Melton, Malik Heath, Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, and to some extent, Ben Sims. That is a 12-deep playmaker group. That is about as impressive as you can get from a depth standpoint, from a weapon standpoint, from a mismatch standpoint, from a variety of different types of weapons that they have. All of that is impressive. And at all different positions, we've seen teams in the past that have had great receivers, but they didn't have the tight ends or the running backs. We've seen great tight ends, but maybe not wide receivers or back. We've seen a little bit of each, but it's rare when you've got it at every single position. Now they need to stay healthy and they need these guys to play at the level that they're capable of playing of, but man, you talk about going shopping and trying to get all the ingredients that you need. It was like, you know, Brian Gutekunst went shopping, got all the ingredients. He's like, I still have all this extra money. Like, I still have more. I can get you more. And it's like, well, we don't even need all those, but like, sure, we'll take them. And that's kind of where it is. You know, when you take, you know, draft pick after draft pick at wide receiver, Dontayvion Wicks in the fifth round, Jaden Reed in the second round, Romeo Doubs in what, the fourth round, I think, Christian Watson in the second, Bo Melton as a practice squad signee, Malik Heath as an undrafted free agent, Samori Toure in the seventh round, Grant Dubose in the seventh round. Like, and we can put Toure and Dubose aside for a second, but like every other one of those guys hits, you're going to get, you know, a lot of depth. And then he did a great job last year of attacking a very deep tight end draft by drafting Luke Musgrave in the second and Tucker Kraft in the third. He goes shopping for Josh Jacobs in free agency this year, gets Marshawn Lloyd in the third round, brings back AJ Dillon for basically nothing. Again, he just brings in all of these different weapons and they're all different types. Jacobs is different than Lloyd. It's different than Dillon. Wicks is different than Reed. It's different than Doubs. It's different than Watson and Melton and Heath. All different types. Musgrave, Kraft, Sims, all different tight ends. That is the beauty of this. And when we talk about Matt LaFleur being a master of mismatches, we'll give him a variety of different players who can attack in a variety of ways and create mismatches regardless of what type of defense that you're going against. And that is, again, the beauty of this is you have all of those weapons with the quarterback that you need, with a play caller that knows how to utilize all those weapons and get those beautiful matchups. It is an offense that is just, you know, beaming with potential. That's the beautiful thing. An offensive line, they're going to have to come through big. They're going to have to step up. There's going to be some guys that need to play better. There's going to be injuries. Some of these young guys are going to have to play. But from a playmaking standpoint, they have everything they need at their disposal. Number five goes along with kind of a lot that we've been talking about, but it's those mismatches. The variety of players that we're talking about, they have different flavors. And again, this goes to a Christian Watson deep threat. Bo Melton is a different type of deep threat. Jaden Reed can attack all three levels of the field. Malik Heath's going to attack the middle of the field, as is Romeo Doubs. Malik Heath is a great blocker. Dontayvion Wicks is a route running, you know, extraordinaire. Like he does everything and gets separation. Musgrave is the speed guy up the seam. Kraft is the run after the catch guy. Ben Sims is the blocking guy. Josh Jacobs is your do everything back. Marshawn Lloyd is going to be your spark plug, your guy that can take it the distance at any given moment. And AJ Dillon's going to be the tough between the tackles guy. You have different varieties of flavors at every single position, and that's going to allow you to get those mismatches. And Matt LaFleur, again, knows how to utilize those mismatches. So it's one thing to have the play caller. It's another to have the pieces that the play caller needs, or vice versa, right? If you have all the pieces, but you don't have a play caller that knows how to utilize them, or you have the play caller, but you don't have the pieces that the play caller needs, it's a moot point. It doesn't work. But now you've got the play caller that knows how to use all these pieces, all the pieces that need an ideal playmaker, and you've got the quarterback to go along with it as well. Number six on my list, versatility. This has been a, you know, in vogue word for covering the Green Bay Packers, is how versatile Brian Gutekunst wants his players. And I love the way that he defined it in the offseason, saying, you know, and again, paraphrasing here, but, you know, we don't want a specific type of linebacker because if all of a sudden we have injuries and now we've just got a run-stopping linebacker, well, now they can't cover, but he's got to be on the field because we've got all these injuries and teams are going to pick that apart. And I'm, again, putting some words in his mouth there a little bit, but that's basically what he's insinuating. And he knows, like every GM knows, that this NFL season, especially now that it is 17 games in the regular season plus extended playoffs, now you got the super wild card and everything else, it is a war of attrition. You are going to have a massive amount of injuries more often than not through the course of a season. And you have to have guys that can step up and play well at a variety of different positions. And we've got an offensive line in Green Bay that has a Jordan Morgan, a Zach Tom, and an Elton Jenkins that can all play a variety of different positions. In fact, Jenkins and Tom might be able to play all five, and Jordan Morgan might be able to play four of the five. That gives you so much flexibility along the offensive line, and a lot of the other guys have versatility as well. You have two tight ends that can do a bit of everything. Wide receivers that can play every spot that's needed in Matt LaFleur's offense. You've got a couple defensive ends that can kick inside. You've got a couple defensive tackles that could theoretically kick outside. You've got linebackers that can play inside and that could potentially play some on the edge if needed as well. You've got safeties who can line up at linebacker, Ketan Oladapo. You've got safeties that could line up in the slot, Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, and David McKinney can do a little bit of everything. I think you even have some corners that could line up at safety. You have so much versatility. And before, on the offensive side of the ball, with Matt LaFleur, that mattered a lot. And now it feels like they even have more versatility. On defense, it felt like Joe Barry was just going to do his thing. You can have all these different pieces. I'm going to keep doing the same thing over and over. That's a little bit of an aggressive approach to it, like maybe over-exaggeration or oversimplification. But for the most part, that was kind of the case. With Jeff Hafley, it feels like this is going to run like a Matt LaFleur offense, except on the defensive side of the ball, where he's going to utilize all these different versatile pieces to the best of his ability to not only take away what the opposing offense is trying to do, but to put his players in the best position to succeed based upon the opponent that they're playing. Change it up and have a game plan that is opponent specific, not just here's what we're going to do. The other team's going to have to beat it, but they know what's coming and they're going to have everything schemed up to attack exactly what we like to do. It's going to be different with Jeff Hafley and that versatility, not only with injuries, but with play callers and scheme designers like Matt LaFleur and Jeff Hafley. This is going to be massively important and it should serve Green Bay extremely well. Number seven, Keyshawn Nixon, not necessarily as a corner, as a returner, and specifically as a kick returner. I do believe these new kick return rules are going to favor kick returners in a significant way. And I do believe Keyshawn Nixon is going to have a huge say in Green Bay's starting field position and some of the huge playmaking that Green Bay's got at their disposal, not just on offense, but from a special teams standpoint as well. I think this is going to be almost like an extension of the offense with what Keyshawn Nixon's going to be able to do as a kick returner. I think he's going to set them up for success far more often than not by getting them in some of the best field position throughout the NFL. That's how much of a weapon that I think he can be. I think it's a legitimate strength. Now, whether or not they use him as a punt returner as well, he's been a little shakier fielding punts. You've kind of got your safe guy in Jaden Reed. We'll see if any of the other, you know, rookies or new guys, you know, try to step up in that position as well. But I don't even care. Keyshawn Nixon as a kick returner is a weapon and has a real opportunity to be a strength of this team. Number eight, the offensive line draft and develop. This has been something that's been going on for forever. There are few teams in the entirety of the NFL that do one thing as well as Green Bay does, finding late round offensive linemen and turning them into starting caliber players. Now, right now, you've got Rashid Walker, seventh round pick, who I believe is a starting caliber offensive tackle in this league. No questions about it. Now, he might not start because Green Bay has Zach Tom and Jordan Morgan, and he might just be the swing tackle, but I wholeheartedly believe that Rashid Walker is still a starting caliber player from the seventh round. Zach Tom, day three selection that they turned in to a dominant offensive lineman. Now, Elgton Jenkins, second round pick. Josh Myers hasn't quite developed, but second round pick. Sean Ryan is a third round pick. Now they get Jacob Monk, Travis Glover, you know, guys like that they're developing from later rounds. We'll see what Jordan Morgan can do as their lone first rounder. I guess Andre Dillard's technically a first rounder, but not theirs on the offensive line as well. But the ability to find these guys and develop them and turn them into good football players. We can go back to Mark Tauscher, Mike Wall, Marco Rivera, Adam Timmerman. We can go forever. I mean, we can talk a very long period of time about Green Bay, David Bakhtiari, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Their ability to have this philosophy of how to find these offensive linemen late in the draft, how to bring them in, how to develop them and make them into serviceable or even Pro Bowl caliber players is remarkable. And they have to continue to do it. I think there are still ways for Josh Myers and Sean Ryan to grow to even make that better. But even still, Zach Tom day three, Rashid Walker day three. Now we'll see what they can do again with Jacob Monk and Travis Glover and those type of guys. It has been a real true skill of this franchise, and I believe it's going to be something that they continue to do moving forward. Next up, number nine, their pro personnel department. They got Keyshawn Nixon off the complete scrap heap for nothing. He got a minimal the bare minimum vet deal with zero guaranteed when they signed him a couple seasons ago. Devondre Campbell, when they picked him up. Now, he was great for one season and then fell off a little bit, but that great all-pro one season was like a one-year, $2 million deal. Rasul Douglas, they found off of a practice squad. Bo Melton, they found off of a practice squad. Alan Lazard, back in the day, they found off of a practice squad. Daniel Whalen, they found in the XFL. Corey Ballantyne, completely off the scrap heap. Guys like Rick Wagner, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, Billy Turner, Adrian Amos, Jared Valdir. Christian Kirksey even had a pretty solid season when he played in Green Bay. Now they've got Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, Andre Dillard. Who's next? They have been able to find players with big free agent money and find the right players, and that has worked for them. They've been able to find guys off of practice squads and guys that have been completely discarded and found ways to utilize them and make them work. Who's next? Gemin Green, the corner that they found off the scrap heap this year. Robert Rochelle, Greg Joseph, Christian Welch, or somebody that's not even on the roster yet. I have full faith in the personnel department that if Green Bay needs a player midseason, they'll pick up somebody from some team's practice squad, grab a guy from their own practice squad, whatever it might be. They're going to find a guy that can come in and be a serviceable player on the 53-man roster. That's been one of the things that has been most impressive about this team. Like, almost everyone that comes in and is a member of the starting lineup is a good football player. Like, they're going to have, in my opinion, like 60, 65 guys that are worthy of making a 53-man roster. Now, they all won't, and it's not like everyone that doesn't, you know, is going to get cut and claimed by other teams, but they have a ton of players that are 53-man roster worthy, and a lot of those guys are going to make their practice squad, and they'll call them up, and like I said, even if they don't, they'll find guys randomly out of nowhere because their ability to scout these players as NFL players. We talk all the time about scouting players in the draft. Now, part of that is part of the discussion when you pick up these guys later as well, but the ability to continue to scout them as they are pros is super important as well. And I think the additions of Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney, maybe lesser so that, you know, Andre Dillard, but their ability to find those guys too, I'm super excited because I know the time, effort, and energy that this front office and personnel staff puts into finding these guys, and they've been pretty freaking fantastic at it. Number 10, this might be putting the cart before the horse just a little bit. I'm going Xavier McKinney. You talk about Jeff Hafley's definition of a post safety and just a safety in general and what he wants. It is the definition of Xavier McKinney. He is going to be, in my opinion, the key that unlocks this Jeff Hafley defense. He is going to be ultra important to the back end, especially with how much I think press man they're going to want to play on the outsides. I think he's going to be a perfect fit. He's a phenomenal safety. I watched his tape from New York. He is that freaking good. And I think the other thing too is he's not just great on the field. He's been great in the locker room by all accounts. He is a leader within that defensive back room. His signing will have ripple waves in a positive manner throughout the entirety of that defense. And I think even, you know, potentially through the entirety of the team. That's how big of a free agent signing this is. I don't know if this is on par with Charles Woodson and Reggie White. I'm not going that far, but I think this could be Brian Gutekunst's ultimate free agent signing. And that's saying something because that Za'Darius Smith signing that first couple seasons was pretty freaking epic. And Preston Smith's had a pretty good run as a Packer as well. I think this could be his best signing, and I think he's going to come in, fit phenomenally with this team, and make a massive, massive impact. Number 11, the youth of this team and their ability to continue to develop as a true core, a true young core that's on the same timeline. Here's Green Bay's oldest players. Preston Smith at age 31, Eric Wilson at age 29, Matt Orzech is 29, Greg Joseph is 29, Alex Magoo is 28. Elton Jenkins is 28. Andre Dillard is 28. Kenny Clark is 28. Corey Ballantyne is 28. Tyler Davis is 27. Zane Anderson is 27. Jair Alexander is 27. That is 12 players. Everyone else is 26 or under. Everyone else. And only one player over 30. And here's the other thing. Of the players 27 and older, there's only four on that list that are really guaranteed to make the roster and or are core members of the team. Jair at age 27, Kenny Clark at age 28, Elton Jenkins at age 28, and Preston Smith at age 31. Those are your only four core players that are aged 27 or older. Four. That's it. It is an incredibly young team. They already showed what they were capable of a season ago, fighting, you know, to the end with San Francisco in a game they probably should have won to go to the NFC Championship game. And now they're going to only get better, theoretically. We'll see if that can actually happen, but they're going to continue to grow as a young core. And I think that is another advantage of this team. This is not an overage team. It's not a team that you're looking that you're going to have to replace a bunch of guys soon. It is a young, growing core that's all on the same timeline, and that is going to serve this team incredibly well. And last but not least, number 12 on my list is the locker room. We have heard from Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst going back to the very early parts of last year, before we even saw this team make a run, before we even saw this team go to the divisional round and give San Francisco everything they could handle. This was early in the year. And even actually, I think right around the trade deadline when they were losing too, as Goody was talking about it again. But even before that, even going into training camp, we heard from Goody and we heard from Matt LaFleur early in 2023 of how unbelievable that locker room and that core was, and all their young draft picks and young players, how much they are football junkies. They eat, sleep, breathe football. It's what they care about. It's what they go do in the off season, hook up, and get together and, you know, do football activities outside of 1265. They bring that energy to practice, as Wes Hodd said, the rookie minicamp this year was a more intense, up-tempo, super productive rookie minicamp than what we've seen in the past. This is a truly legitimate, by all accounts, special core of the team that is guiding this locker room. It seems like there are extremely few, if any, egos. It seems like everyone is on the same page, focused on the same goal, and that this is a team that is driven to get better, that is driven to get to the Super Bowl, and that's driven to win a Lombardi and bring it back to Green Bay. And that might all sound like, I don't know, just cliche coach speak or things like that. I don't believe so. I believe that it is true. I believe it's legitimate. I believe we got a glimpse of it this past season. Listen, they were 2-5 last year. They're 3-6 after that. They trade away Rasul Douglas at the trade deadline, and things are not looking good. What do? They bounce back and they get back into it. And then what happens after that? They lose two in a row to New York and Tampa. They're at 6-8, and playoffs are looking pretty bleak. What do? They go 3 wins in a row to get into the playoffs and beat Dallas and give, again, San Francisco hell in that divisional round game. They had 3 quitting points last season at 2-5, at 3-6, and after losing two in a row to New York and Tampa. And they rallied every single time. For a young, inexperienced team, after jettisoning, Aaron Rodgers, the face of their franchise in the offseason, that's pretty impressive. Even the year before that, in 2022, they lost 7 out of 8 games. I go back to this game all the time. After losing 7 of 8, they're going into the fourth quarter against Chicago on the road, a bad Chicago team, and they're down 19-10. 19-10 in week 13 after losing 7 out of 8 games. Playoffs just about all gone. They could have easily quit in that situation, and they didn't. They were 4-8 at the time, and they came back. They won against Chicago. They won 4 in a row overall and had every opportunity to go against Detroit in that last week and get into the playoffs. It's just a team that didn't quit. And I think that season still had a lot of those veterans on it, so I'm less talking about that. But in 2023, I think we saw already a lot of what this team is about and what they're made of. And I think they're only going to gel further this year. I think adding Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, and another class of hungry rookies is going to be super beneficial as well. But I do believe that there is a true, legitimate, special vibe to the core of this team, to this locker room. And I do think it is something that they are protecting at all costs because of how valuable it is to this franchise right now. It takes that type of camaraderie and desire for excellence to reach that level. Now, whether they get there or not, TBD. All of these things that we talked about today, all the strengths have to come together in all the best ways. And all the weaknesses that we'll talk about tomorrow are going to have to find a way to be mitigated. But they've got a lot of the really important ingredients, including head coach, quarterback, weapons, depth, playmaking, you know, a great locker room, great young leaders, a young team that's developing on the right timeline. There's so much that is going in their favor right now. It is a great time to be a Green Bay Packer fan. My 12 strengths one more time: Jordan Love, Matt LaFleur, their overall depth, their offensive weapons, their ability to generate mismatches, the versatility that they have all throughout the team, Keyshawn Nixon as a kick returner, their ability to draft and develop along the offensive line, their pro personnel department's ability to find players, high-priced players, low-priced players, practice squad guys, scrap heap guys, etc. Xavier McKinney coming in and being the key that can unlock that defense, the youth in development, and the locker room. Those are the strengths of your 2024 Green Bay Packers. That is going to do it for me today. I'll be back here tomorrow with a less fun topic, the Packers' weaknesses. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, and Arnaldo Espinoza. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.